Chapter 19. Ron listened to the radio broadcast with a dark look of despair. The world was a place of irreparable mutilations that cynically robbed victims of even their honor. It had been that way since John Kennedy had been killed. When Bobby had run for president, everyone said, "Somebody's going to shoot him too." Ron had been working the graveyard shift at IBM and waiting for the results of the California primary. He let out a war whoop of victory when Bobby made his speech and concluded with, "And now it's on to Chicago, and let's win there." A few minutes later, he was shot. Ron had been changing stations, looking for analysis of the results. At first, the words "Kennedy had been shot" were confusing in his mind. He thought the commentator was talking about him shooting into the lead in the delegate race. The truth was a bizarre shock. He listened for the rest of the time like a dull, monitoring robot. After work, his head hurt too much for him to sleep. He rode around in his car, clinging to the announcer's voice. He'd been with the Sun reporter for hours, and he was reluctant to turn the radio off, at least until the announcer had been replaced. It was his private way of keeping vigil at the spot where he had been with Bobby Kennedy most often. The reporter was saying that with head wounds of this type, the range of damage went from severe mental incapacity to the projected ability to be back on the campaign trail within 6 weeks. At this point, the announcer had said, there was still room for guarded optimism. It was bullshit. Robert Kennedy was already just about dead. The reporter had continued with a story about his mother Rose, who had been awakened and told that another son had been shot in the head. He had blubbered so uncontrollably that he had to pull the car over to the side of the road. Nothing had really made sense since JFK had been killed. Johnson was a horror. The Chicago convention he had anticipated so fervently was a horror. The war was a horror. There was no way to make the horror stop. There was no way to be sure that he wouldn't be sent to Vietnam and asked to be more part of the horror. He really didn't think he could bring himself to run away from his country. But it didn't matter what he said now. They really ordered him to go. He knew there was a force inside him that would demand the right to be right at the center of things. He knew he would get himself killed. It would be part of the plan. He knew his sense of reality wasn't strong enough to stand up to that. Tuesday's newscaster was talking about the execution of a prisoner. They held the poor bastard at the ends of four ropes with rifles arranged around him. They taunted him for hours, made him beg for his life, eat animal shit, lick their shoes. Then they blew his head off. Ron saw himself trapped inside that man. He now felt that flies were swarming over his body and that nothing else had changed or stopped. The man had just been used to make things more gruesome. Maybe I should just kill myself in some pleasurable way, he thought. He had never fit into the social scheme of things. If he could do one great thing before he killed himself, his life would be redeemed. He was sure the barker wouldn't say, "Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. He turned off the radio and looked down at his notepad with the number 65 and the list of candidates' names with all the circles around Kathy's name. How the hell is he supposed to write an article based on that? You're stupid, a voice screamed inside of him. Not stupid, corrected a second voice. Just immature. Then the second voice added, don't let anyone ever call you stupid. It's almost time now for him to leave for school. He had a class in less than an hour and wanted time to pick up a container of coffee. During the first week he had a car, Ron tied the trunk down with an assortment of things. He'd started with twisted coat hangers, hadn't gotten 5 blocks from the house when they'd pulled apart, sending the trunk bobbing up and down in the air. Next, he tried a heavy-duty extension cord, which he'd taken from George's workbench. By the second day, the cord had stretched and begun to rip. The thought of having it chained or welded shut never did occur to him. The trunk was just a pain in the ass. He ended up using rope that had to be retied every couple of days. The drive to the college went as smoothly as a Sunday morning dream. He would finish writing his article after class, find Kathy, and see if she wanted to go to the Birth of October party that the commuter was having. Ron liked his prospects for the day as he turned off the parkway, cruised down the road that led to the college. About 6 blocks outside of the center of town, out of the corner of his eye, Ron saw what appeared to be a policeman waving for help. Ron stopped, looked in his rearview mirror. The cop was bent over the open hood of an obviously disabled vehicle. Ron figured the situation to be an off-duty policeman who had broken down and was in need of a ride, probably back to the cop shop about a half a mile down the street. Maybe he wasn't even a cop. Maybe he was just a mailman or something like that. Ron parked his car and started back up the street to see what he could do to help. As he got closer, he saw that it was indeed a cop. Ron shuddered briefly, told himself that not every cop was the tank. Can I help you, officer? He said as he got to the hood. To his amazement, he saw a bread-sized box electrical unit propped on top of the engine. You're going 37 and 30. License and registration. Oh, no, screamed Ron. That's radar? You're not stuck here? You mean this is what you wanted me for? The cop grinned at Ron with an amused expression. Get your license and registration app, please. Some last particle of Ron's brain hunted the notion that everything was going too well for this to happen today. It held to the idea that this was really a misunderstanding that would be cleared up. You mean you're not kidding? I wouldn't kid you, kid, said the cop with a snaggle-toothed grin that sent Ron back to his car, muttering that he should just get in his car and take right the fuck off. That's what he should do. But then again, how many cars look like his? His eyes attached himself to the battered trunk. Cocksucker, he said under his breath. But he didn't have to come this way every day for the rest of the year. He plucked his registration from his glove compartment and started back to the speed trap. Guy was already writing the initial information on the ticket. Ron studied the cop's face. His skin had a leathery look that reminded him of his father, but Ron could tell by the swollen neck and forehead curves, rentages around the bulbous nose. Pig was a drinker. He had been in one too many bars with his old man, not to be able to pick one out every time. The cop compared the license and registration. Who is Marjorie Bombasco? Ron felt like he'd been answering this question all of his life. It never ceased like an invasion of his privacy. "My mother," he said, looking at the cop in a way that wanted to slam the hood down on the black box at his fingers. The cop wasn't satisfied. "You say it's your mother, but here it says your name is Ronald Tuck." If Ron had shown the bloated-faced bastard his hands, he would have seen that they were clenched and shaking. He bit on his words sharply as he spoke. "My parents were divorced when I was 2. My mother remarried. I kept my name." The cop proceeded to write out the ticket. "Now, Ronnie, this is a summons for driving 37 miles per hour in a 30 mile per hour zone. If you wish to plead not guilty, you must contact court prior to the appearance date." "Town definitely needs the money, huh? I mean, you guys must be really hard up if you have to trick people to earn your salary. You should move along now. If you're dissatisfied, you can tell the judge about it. I hope you get to be there on your birthday, because that's just what I'm going to do." "That's fine," said the cop, turning back to the machine. Impulsively, Ron jumped out into the street, waving his arms like a distressed duck. The approaching car came to a stop. "Just wanted you to see this speed trap here," shouted Ron, pointing to the cop, who waved the motorist on. "Look, you little prick, if you don't get out of here right now, I'm going to take you back to the station. Personally, I'm going to kick the shit out of you." Cot's face gotten redder. Ron saw spit in the corners of his mouth. Ron felt better. He looked at the ground, turned, walked back to his car. A voice told him to go very easy because he'd pushed things to the point where they might go right over the edge. He drove the rest of the way to the college in shock. The ticket would probably cost at least $25, the voice inside him said. "Fuck it. You don't have to pay it right now. You can stall it for weeks and weeks, so that when you finally do have to pay, it'll just feel like an old bill." So the truth is, it didn't really happen. Ron liked the realization and was beginning to feel better by the time he got out of his car again. The class was English. The story was Abraham and Isaac, and Ron was fucking ready. He decided that he would like nothing better than to blow Warren Lashley's version of God right out of the water. Ron had listened to Dylan's Highway 61 until he got the first verse copied out verbatim. Since Lashley encouraged his students to write their reactions to the readings for each class on the sideboard, Ron decided to copy out the whole opening of the song. Lashley had started with the story of the creation and fall from the Bible. Then they read the Greek play Agamemnon and Antigone, and Ron thought that they were done with the Bible, but he'd gone right back for Abraham and Isaac and that fiasco. Picking up his coffee, Ron started for class. He'd seen the red-haired girl drinking coffee, and Lashley knocked out 2 containers during each class, so he guessed it must be okay. He put his container on the desk and went to the sideboard. It was the first time he could remember writing on the board since 9th grade math class. He stepped back to look at what he'd done so far. The letters were very large and round. They were twice as big as anybody else's writing. For a second, he considered whether he should just erase the first line he put up and sit back down before anybody noticed. But nobody seemed to be watching him. There was a steady hum of normal conversation, which Ron decided wouldn't be there if the writing was that laughable. He studied the line on the board. God said to Abraham, a voice in his head completed the line. Joke's on you, jerk off. That was a little different than the way Dylan wrote it. Kill me a son. Kill me a son went up, and Rod's interior commentary broke in. Abe fell down, thankful that God wasn't for real. Ron looked up from the board in time to see Lashley enter the room carrying his books and one container of coffee, followed by the red-haired girl who carried two containers of coffee and her notebook. She tried to set one of the containers down casually on Lashley's desk, but none of it was missed by any of the other girls in the class who had figured out what was going on already. Ron had also figured out what was happening. He cursed to himself. What kind of democracy was it when the teacher glommed the best-looking piece of ass in the class? He returned to the board and continued copying from his sheet of paper. He turned briefly to see if Lashley was ready to start. There was no sign of it. People were still coming into the room. He cramped. Abe said, "Man, you must be putting me on," into the first line. God said, "No." Abe said, "What?" He was out of space. He looked over to Lashley, who'd taken the lid off his first container and moved over to the windowsill from which he usually started things. There was no place to put the rest of it. What should he do now? What he had up there made no sense. But it was too late to erase and write smaller the way he should have done at the beginning. Lashley had a big grin on his face. He had recognized the song and the predicament simultaneously. "Let's begin by dealing with the problem right in front of us," said Lashley. Ron quickly scribbled, "Could not finish," at the bottom and sat down. He tried to open his coffee, but squeezed the middle of it too hard. Hot coffee ran over his hand. Lashley watched Ron, then looked back at his unfinished quote. "What really does that long thing over there stand for? I mean, it doesn't make much sense to me." The teacher was staring right at Ron, who knew he was speaking to him. "It's from Bob Dylan's song." "I don't really care where it's from," said Lashley, pointing, looking at the class for emphasis. Clarity meant more than the source of the message he was trying to deliver. "I copied this quote of Dylan," said Ron, determined to explain himself, "because I thought it was pertinent to our class. It wouldn't fit into the space on the board, and well..." Ron was becoming flustered. "I've got the rest of the quote here, if you want me to read it." "The quote itself is unimportant," stated Lashley, categorically. "The more interesting question, and incidentally, the question that Abraham had to ask himself, is what you do when you've run out of space and it's time to go. Abraham's faith was tested to see if he had the will to follow his conscience." Ron didn't understand, and he felt used. "I started to put the quote up because I thought it would have some bearing on things." Lashley took a long pull on his coffee and stared back at Ron and out at the whole class. "If you weigh your thoughts down to one-dimensional view of what happens to you, you will become old and stifled." Ron had nothing to say, stared at his sticky hand, waited for Lashley to continue. The professor opened his imitation horsehair vest, pulled out a small white box of cigars. Chubby white girl, who'd been calling him Warren for the first two classes, said, "Oh, no. You're going to smoke cigars?" A slow grin spread over Lashley's face like, "Honey, you don't want me to smoke these?" he said in a high-pitched, whinnying drawl. She brightened at his attention. He shifted in her seat, took hold of her desk. Maybe we should have a vote to see if we should allow smoking. You're going to make all these people vote on such a silly thing? Asked Lashley with feigned anger. Her smile grew so broad that it threatened to rip at the corners of her mouth. She straightened her army shirt and soaked in the pleasure of making this many people, especially him, do anything. It's not a silly question, she said. It's not only silly, it's a stupid question for people have to concern themselves with because it lacks any form of major concern. It's like that Dylan thing. Ron felt newly embarrassed. Lashley turned his head back in Ron's direction. The concern is limited, and it avoids the larger issue. And that's what I'm interested in, the larger issues behind these situations, not the petty concerns involved in them. If you take away the larger question, none of it becomes very interesting. And there is no need for these stories, unless you're obsessed with the details of history, which I'm not. He said all of this very quickly, in the same breath. Several people in the class giggled when he took a badly needed deep breath. The chubby girl sat back, satisfied that he hadn't lit the cigar, which had been her small but necessary point. She smiled over at him like he'd given her a candy bar. Lashley looked back at her, spread out his best topping-style grin. You're happy because you got what you wanted, right? She felt exposed by him and was delighted again because he had tugged the idea out like he was taking off her blouse. He could do that anytime, as far as she was concerned. Lashley shifted back towards Ron with a harsher tone. And you're upset because you didn't get to finish your quote, right? It's not that I'm upset, said Ron. It's that it seems foolish that you didn't want to hear any of my explanation. Ron knew he shouldn't have said that, and the minute the words left his mouth, he felt the tightness in his throat and wanted a cigarette. It's really that your ego is too involved for you to even know why you're upset. Ron's face flushed again. He wanted to get up and leave, but didn't. Lashley swore that there were no more opening questions and raised the lit book to commence his rendition of the manuscript attributed to God. The class couldn't have ended soon enough as far as Ron was concerned. He was out the door before most of the students had gotten out of their seats. He swept down the hall like it was a runway he was building up speed with. There was a clanging and a shuffling of lockers being opened, closed. Friends were calling out to each other and doing imitations of what they just heard and were in the process of transcribing into their own language. Ron made it across the quad and into the newspaper room in record time. The place was empty, populated only by a stack of books that people had left there on their way to class. Ron sat down. His eyes roamed the room and settled on two large manila envelopes marked Liberation News Service. Ron pulled out one of the envelopes, started looking at pictures, reading articles that were concerned with the war. He made a note to study these things in the future, but not right now. Right now, he needed another coffee and about 6 cigarettes.